If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks, for closet Christs. The show is the voice of the Ashtar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. Be listening on Wednesday. We have an appointment with destiny.
Greetings in the divine light of the One. I'm Commander Lady Athena, and you're listening to the voice of the Ashtar Command, Cosmic Pep Talks for Closet Christs. This evening, our seminar topic is Awakening Beyond All Differences, Duality, and Qualifications. So if you're ready, take a deep breath and integrate your divine core essence and bring it all the way down into your feet and take another breath and expand it out as far as you can beyond the confines of the body, the mind, the thought systems, the beliefs, and anything that you've ever allowed to constrict and confine your unlimited beingness. So we're in the process, as we develop our awareness and expand it, of transcending differences and duality and the sense of other selfness. So let me ask you, are you aware of where you are attached to persons, places, things, states of consciousness, habits, places that you're stuck in and have to have in place for you to feel happy or right about yourself and your life? And another question, are you using all your energy in attempting to hold on to anyone or anything at all in your life? Well, of course, we're all going to say yes, right? Of course. Why? Because we're not yet in that state of absolute, unalloyed joy, freedom, and peace. And until you are, and that's all you are, you're not there yet. So at each stage of our awakening, we let go of unnecessary psychological clutter. And all clutter is psychological. All of the previous states of consciousness fall away with our ascent, like the stages of a ascending spacecraft. So we are only imprisoned by our own self-definitions, by what we've identified with, and what we've distanced from. Those two go together, attraction and aversion. You can't have one without the other, and they're equally binding. So we are entrapped within this illusion of separation from total joy and freedom, from total peace and happiness, by our attachments and aversions. Another way of looking at this dilemma is to realize that we're all suffering from addiction. Every single person, except, of course, those very few who are fully God-realized, is addicted to certain set habits and beliefs, and to viewing oneself and life and the world in a certain way. Check it out. This will be a good journaling exercise. We see the world through a certain lens, but the only one who has put that lens in place and colored and interpreted what is being seen is your own mind. the world is like a blank canvas, and the mind projects the color and the imagery that seems to appear on that blank screen of innocent luminosity. So awakening is the process by which we recognize our addictive patterns and finally get to the place where we're willing to seek the necessary assistance to transcend them. You know, it's like any addictive process. You first have to recognize that you're addicted, and then you have to recognize that you're going to need some help to get out of that process. You're going to have to change your life and create a different way of living your life to stay free of that particular addiction. And the same is true with spiritual awakening. We come to recognize those areas of our life where we're not fully joyous, fully free, or fully at peace. And moreover, we come to question the validity of these states before we may have erroneously believed that this is just the way it is. This is common to everyone. And the tendency was to just dismiss it as being human without ever going beyond or questioning why one is never fully joyous, free, or at peace. Those to whom we've looked for answers and advice were themselves bound by the same addictions, and thus were unable to discern the root cause of our common misperception, and with it, almost a universal discontent. That which we perceive as the world is simply a projection of our collective misperception. All of us are addicted to perceiving ourselves, others, and the world in terms of differences and duality and other than selfness. When I speak about the self, I'm speaking about the self with a capital S, that is the divine, authentic self. So this erroneous perception of others out there is the root cause of fear. Viewing life from separation engenders fear, and fear causes us to invent an imaginary false self called the ego in order to protect ourselves, or so we think. Collectively, our false selves have manifested a false world in which to fight and defend and ward off attacks against our separated, frightened egos. You know, in truth, none of this is any more real than a nightmare from which we awaken, I might say with great relief, and perfectly safe and sound. So the only answer to end any form of suffering, however it may manifest, personal or collective, is simply to awaken from the dream of separation. Those of us that are on a conscious spiritual path, that's our dharma. You can't fix the world. You can't awaken another person. But no one awakens without affecting the entire collective. We go to sleep as one, and we awaken as one, because inherently we are one. Therefore, your dharma is simply to awaken yourself. And that is your contribution to awakening and transforming the, quote, world. So suffering is actually a way that many have used to awaken from the dream. Like when, you know, a nightmare becomes so intense, we often awaken in the midst of it. But know that every soul has orchestrated the timing and manner of its awakening. And some require drastic means. It will do whatever it takes. The soul, you, the soul, will do whatever it takes to get the message through to your human personality. And if you don't pay attention to the little bumps and nudges and intuitive pushes, pretty soon the whole rug is jerked out from under your feet. But you will be awakened. Your attention will be grabbed by something. So life is actually a play of consciousness. And what a play it is. Because we get to be this for a while and that for a while. Or more accurately, we, as God expressing through this manyness, gets to play act as this and that. And this is all regarded in the Eastern understanding as the divine play, or lila, as it's called in Sanskrit. And it was all a grand play, which we as demigods really enjoyed until we forgot to laugh and began to buy into this other than selfness. Then we became entrapped and developed that separative point of view that we call the ego mind. And differences and duality and karma and reincarnation entered our experience. So that is why every awakening is a return to happiness, freedom, joy, and peace. Because it's our release into unbound loving. And the loving, which is the very nature, dissolves all sense of againstness, differences, and duality. The only thing you could truly say when you're in your present consciousness is to say, I am the love of God. That is true. You are the love of God. And that's all that needs to be there, is the love. And so the loving and the love is the one perfect way that we can express spirituality. You might say genuine spirituality is but unconditional love. That's all it is. Love is the manifestation of genuine spirituality. And no love can be present as long as there is a sense of otherness. The ego projecting cannot ever result in the experience of authentic love. The intimacy that everyone craves, the romance, the connection, comes only from the divine self, unattached, unfettered, and released in full, boundless being. So that is why your feelings of happiness and relief and peace are like the high fives of approval. That you're awakening to the truth. To reality, to your own inherent divinity. Pay attention. The slightest little whiff of happiness is letting you know you've made a connection with reality. You've connected to truth, to God, to your authentic self. Well, very simply, we are here simply to fully awaken to the truth that we are God. You are God. I am God. Everyone and everything is God. There is only God, as this and that. There's nothing else. So take this, if you will, as an analogy. Regard the body as a light bulb. Regard the mind as the switch. Turn the light on and off with that switch. And our life is the lamp. God is like the electrical current that illumines all lamps. And once we turn on the switch of our mind, our degree of spiritual awakening is the amount of wattage we each carry. God is the power supplying all the voltage, but our body is a light bulb, our mind is a switch, and our life as a lamp can only convey a certain wattage depending upon our level of awakening or enlightenment. In the temporary illusion of time, space, and becomingness, this appears as difference in various individuals. Because some individuals carry 25 watts, others perhaps 100 watts, and a full avatar like Satya Sai Baba, for example, carries billions of watts. So within the stage defined as human, the wattage in our bodies and minds is gradually being increased in ampage. Each level of initiation increases the level of wattage we carry. In the esoteric teaching, this is actually given a measurement. For example, at the first degree of initiation, one carries 25% pure soul light. At the second degree of initiation, 50% pure soul light. At the third degree of initiation, 75% pure soul light. And at the fourth degree of initiation, one is now 100% pure light. And the soul itself, the individualized self or Son of God, merges and is absorbed up into the Atma or monad. In other words, becomes one with a Father or God. So from the fourth degree of initiation on, you no longer have a soul. The soul has dissolved into the higher state that we call the Atma or spirit. But there's more. There's always more. At the fifth degree of initiation, which is full mastery, one resurrects entirely from the mortal body into a pure, immortal master of light. But there's more. At the sixth degree of initiation, one ascends into full lordship. So this gradual increasing of divine light voltage and wattage was the plan established by the masters after the fall into third-dimensional material consciousness, which occurred after the fall or during the fall, which occurred in Atlantis. And the process of initiation was instituted as the quickest way they could think of to return soul back into its natural divine state. Your natural divine state is pure existence, awareness, bliss. So we're all on this path of return to some degree. And all of us will fully return to unalloyed joy and freedom. And let me share with you this evening the three qualities that condition and characterize all life forms in all dimensions of life, including time and cycles in our life and cycles in our day. Three qualities, color and condition, the energy as we move through time and space. And in this process of awakening and return, they are called, in Sanskrit, the three gunas. Guna means quality or characteristic. And the three gunas are inertia, activity, and balance. Everything in creation is subject to these three qualities, which give it, whatever it is, its particular mood, let's say, its mode of expression. And these three qualities in Sanskrit are called tamas, rajas, and sattva. Tamas is inertia. Rajas is activity. And sattva is balance. And all three qualities or gunas influence everyone and everything without exception. We are all subject to these three qualities throughout the day. For example, in the morning when you feel sluggish and sleepy and having a hard time waking up, you're under the energy of inertia or tamas. Then you get up and you brush your teeth and you have your breakfast and you drink your coffee and you're ready to go. You get in the car and you drive to work and you're under the mode of rajas or activity. And then let's say you come home in the evening and you want to spend time and meditate and have a little quiet time for yourself. Maybe you do some yoga, maybe you sit and meditate, and you go into that state of peace and stillness. You've come into sattva, into the balance. And then towards the evening, you start to yawn and you feel sleepy, and tamoguna is coming into play again, which draws you gradually into sleep. So you can see how these three energies play through your average day and govern how you experience yourself in each of these activities, whether you feel sleepy and dull or activated and moving forward in your life, or you're in a state of inner composure and equanimity. So, the predominant guna or quality of a person's nature will also determine how that person may awaken. Excuse me. For example, a person in the mode of inertia or tamoguna is like a wet, soaking wet ball of cotton. No matter how much you try to ignite a fire in that cotton, it's not going to ignite. Rajoguna is like a cotton ball soaked in alcohol. Just putting that flame close to it, it's going to ignite and catch fire. And Sattvaguna is where there is just the ball of cotton aglow, beautifully aglow with the fire. the fire being in this analogy, the sparking of divine consciousness, divine awareness, the activating of that. So I want to examine each of the three gunas separately with you and show you where they apply to spiritual awakening and also to your own habits. Tamoguna, or the quality of inertia, manifests as sluggishness, laziness, apathy, dullness, torpor, sleepiness, and any form of resistance to get up and go. A person who is predominantly tamasic in nature will probably resemble your typical couch potato. Such a person lacks the self-initiative necessary to move forward in life and will be too mentally dull to be able to even comprehend anything beyond, if you'll pardon the analogy, beer in the boob tube. Or TV, for those of you unfamiliar with our American jargon. The tamasic individual has habits that match his nature. Excuse me, I'm still getting over that congestion I've been having. For example, the tamasic individual will relish stale leftovers, junk food, fermented, putrid foods, liquor, heavy meats, drugs, and any substances whatsoever that will further numb him out and turn him off. The whole process of the tamasic individual is to completely numb out to life. For entertainment, the tamasic individual relishes violence, bloody and gory crime scenes, criminal activity, war, cruelty and torture. And yes, the predominant tamasic individual relishes all things relating to doom and darkness. It would be difficult for such a person to awaken spiritually, as it would for that ball of cotton soaking wet to be ignited. This kind of individual will need first to awaken to full humanness. They must be activated by the rajasic quality of activity to motivate them to begin to integrate a genuine quality of life. They need to get a life, to put it bluntly. And unfortunately, Sai Baba said, these individuals are pretty much the majority on the planet today. That's a scary thought, but I believe he would know. Also, those individuals are incapable of seeing goodness, godliness, and virtue. They will see evil in the greatest saint because they're incapable of seeing anything that's true. They're in the complete covering of the mode of what we would call ignorance or darkness, and they cannot comprehend the light. So in terms of those of us on a spiritual path, during our awakening, we can also fall into tamasic habits when we give in to laziness and we sleep too much. Or we're too lazy and tired to get up and do our yogic practice or meditate or go to the gym or run, whatever it is you do. Or when we eat too much. Or when we waste time in all forms of pointless self-indulgence. or when we give in to slovenly, sloppy habits of all kinds. Tamasic person tends to be very unkempt, often very dirty in their personal hygiene. Their homes will be dirty and messy. They won't make their beds. They'll let the dishes pile up in the sink. They don't care if it smells bad. They're insensitive to anything of a higher vibration. Tamasic habits also include giving in to depression. Depression is a tamasic attitude. Or withdrawing from life and social contacts. Moodiness. Sullenness. Vulgar, coarse, insensitive speech. And of course, every form of criminal and cruel activity that harms others. Those are the individuals that actually enjoy the suffering of others. Seems hard to imagine, doesn't it? So as Sai Baba has warned us repeatedly, to waste time is to waste our life, which is subject to end at any moment. So if we don't use this golden opportunity to awaken and to attain spiritual liberation, when will we find such a time again? There's no guarantee that you'll find another time, particularly during the advent of a major avatar who has come specifically for your liberation. And since the majority of people on this planet tend to be tamasic by nature, we need to be very vigilant to not morph into the collective malaise of mediocrity, or even worse, subhuman behavior. So the tamasic individual borders on subhuman and, at its worst, demonic behavior. So black is the color that is used generally to designate tamoguna. So let's look at rajoguna, the quality of activity and passion. This is the energetic individual, full of too much get up and go. The driven type A achiever. The people who fall into this category are driven to acquire, attain, achieve more and more of whatever their passion drives them towards. They have minds that flit like a fly here and there with no discernment. They can't be still for a moment. They're like a horse, always in motion, flinching and flicking and moving their feet. They are prone to excesses in speech as well. Too much talking. Too much heated talking, too much movement and drive for variety and adventure. They are driven by passion, and red is the color used to designate rajoguna. They also prefer hot, spicy foods and drinks, and can be slaves of the palate and taste buds. They can be gourmands, which, of course, would be really capitalizing on catering to the palate and its tastes. But they enjoy indulging in all of the passions and pleasures of emotional and physical activity, sports, romance, and such. They enjoy anything that is a conquest, a challenge, and a daring. They also make up the majority of the achievers and superachievers in society. The athletes, warriors, adventurers, heads of business, finance, politics. They are the movers and shakers of the world. So So the world itself is primarily a manifestation of Rajoguna. Their entertainment preferences also run along a similar line. They crave the excitement and drama and challenges of life, however they're delivered. Now, spiritually, we fall prey to Rajoguna by burning out with too much intensity, too much drive, even if it's spiritually directed. Too much is too much. So there has to be sufficient moderation and balance in one's life. Or the tendency is to become too critical and hard on ourselves. And if you're hard and critical about yourself, you're going to be hard and critical with others as well. Or the tendency is to become impatient, to not complete what one starts, to think the grass is going to be greener on the other side of the fence. And so they don't stay the spiritual course, but stop short of the goal of full God realization. Or we live our lives with such a business focus and orientation, and so full of busyness that there's no time for inner stillness and spiritual contemplation and absorption. Spiritual energy is incredibly intense, fiery, and rich. And you must couple study and activity with inner stillness so that those spiritual fires can integrate and be absorbed. Otherwise, what happens is that the spiritual energies come down and they hit the mind filled with worries and agitations, filled with thoughts and concerns, and not receptive to that higher energy, and you get strokes, migraine headaches, or that great powerful love tries to enter the heart and it can't receive it and you have a heart attack. Or it comes against that bitterness where you've had such a bitter life that your attitude has become bitter and you develop diabetes. Or it comes against that part of self-hatred and self-judgment and desire for suicide or to escape, and it produces cancer. Pay attention that that energy that's coming into you now in this incredible downpouring of spiritual ampage, that you've got to take time for absorption and stillness. And you've got to find a way to quiet your gerbil cage mind, your gerbil in a cage mind. So almost all of the problems people are complaining of now simply are because they lack balance in their life and a time when they can just be still, quiet, peaceful, turning off all the media, and doing absolutely nothing but being. So life can become too frenetic, too frantic, too driven by the world of time, business, career, and social obligations, to where it leaves no time for cultivating self-awareness, much less God-realization. Too much. It can be even too much reading, even too much service, too many seminars, too much input and not enough output. You take in, take in, take in, but you're not allowing time for the input of the divine into your life to where you can absorb that input whatever it is you're taking in. And when you take in and absorb, you also have to ground it. I have found that the one thing that grounds a spiritual person is love. And if you're not really relating in a loving way to the people in your life, you're not grounded. Your mind's off somewhere, your heart's off somewhere, your desires are off somewhere, and you're not present. That's when you're ungrounded. That's when you look like a space cadet. You're not showing up in your life. You're not down in your sneakers. So rajasic impediments to our spiritual progression include irritation, impatience, anger, lust, jealousy, envy, greed, spitefulness, criticalness, sarcasm, unkind humor, rash impetuosity in speech and action, and so forth. You get the picture. You also get the remedy. Chill. Dial it down. Stop and smell the roses. Enjoy the present moment. You know, be here now. And laugh more. Hew more. Lighten up. Spirit is never driven. It is always joyous and always present here and now. Now we'll look at the quality of sattvaguna. That's the quality of balance, goodness, virtue, and all that could be associated with spirituality. Sweetness, gentleness, mildness, kindness, self-discipline, self-control, wholesome speech, wholesome lifestyle, good habits, self-governance of the highest quality. Well-adjusted, healthy, happy, even-mannered, your ideal person. And yes, we all have those moments, don't we? Moments, yeah, moments. Sometimes just fleeting moments. but herein lies the rub. We can be so spiritually impeccable in our estimation that we develop the most damaging habits of all, comparing ourselves to others and thus developing a sense of superiority or pride. And pride is one of the most damaging characteristics of the ego and will bring one down faster than anything else. Pride is death to the spiritual advancement, and absolutely must be carefully recognized and immediately uprooted at the slightest hint of its appearing. It can infect anyone at any time, no matter how high that person may have developed spiritually. That's the problem. You could even be up to the level of an adept, really high-level master at some level. But if pride comes in, that's the downfall. That's what happened to Ravana, the archdemon that was the adversary of Lord Rama, if you know the story of the Ramayana. That's how he fell. He had attained great spiritual height through his spiritual austerities. He was a devotee of Lord Shiva, and he had great tapas, great austerities that he engaged in, great ritual feats of ardor. He was a very rajasic individual. And he fell because of pride and lust after the wife of Rama, and anger. You know, but they all kind of go together. Prideful people are people that get angry at the slightest intimation that they could be wrong. A prideful person has to have the last word, has to be right in everything. would rather be right than happy, would rather win if they have to step on your face in the process. They don't care as long as they're right. So that quality we see so much in the dog-eat-dog world of commerce today in the world, we have to be very, very vigilant. Especially if we're a spiritually advanced person working in the outer world. Very, very difficult to maintain your path, your walk, your integrity, your spiritual focus, and to be in the world at the same time. I mean, that's your path of initiation today. That's what it is. Signs of pride also are pointing out the faults and shortcomings of others, and perhaps feeling happy that these faults are not in oneself, or that one has already transcended them. Uh-oh, look out. Here comes pride and vanity headed right into your consciousness. Baba said we must forget entirely the good that we've done for others. Remember always the good that they've done to us, and completely remember our own faults and shortcomings. So you focus on the goodness in others and how you can always improve in your own life. That's one of the antidotes he gives for pride. And also to remind yourself that no matter how high you think you are, there's always someone much greater. You're really about as significant as a little grain of sand in all the vastness of the Sahara Desert when you come right down to it in terms of the human personality. So again, there is an attachment to being in a high state of vibration and avoiding people and places and things of a lower vibration. Oh, this is huge. Distancing oneself from life, attached to certain spiritual highs, or one's spiritual practice, or one's method, or lifestyle, to where any interruption whatsoever ruins one's whole day and causes upset, if not outrage, irritation, and anger. We get so addicted to our bliss, our peace of mind, or what we think is bliss and peace of mind. But you know what? Bliss and peace are like pregnancy. They're either all and complete, or they're not at all. They're just a temporary mood. That's a harsh teaching. But I'm speaking to very advanced souls. You're the only ones that would be interested in hearing what I have to say. And you're very intent upon attaining liberation in this lifetime and self-realization. I'm speaking to you. So these are things that we have to look at with open eyes and without any self-deception. The ego is incredibly clever in presenting its agenda to you, which will seem very self-cherishing. It will seem very like it's really patting you on the back, when in reality it's crippling and hobbling you and holding you to a pattern that has become your prison. Oh, it might be a very sattvic prison. It might be filled with all sorts of spiritual mood-making accoutrements that make you feel very good when you're in that. But you can't go out into the world and feel at home. You can't see beyond the personalities of the people that you interact with and see the face of God. You can't behold the Christ everywhere you look. And you're not feeling free. There's a background of discontent and personal agitation that natters away all the time. You may have great difficulty sleeping. You may need to even resort to sleeping pills or wine or something to ratchet down from the agitations of the day that weigh heavily on your mind. I would suggest, if that's you, that you take a very serious, hard look at what you want to attain in your life. Because you're selling yourself out to the world. And the world is nothing more than an interpretation and what you've made of it in your own mind. You can stop the world and get off. But to do that, you have to put truth and your own divine self above all else and be loyal to that alone. You have to ask very clearly the divine Lord God of your being if it's truly for your highest good to be involved in that relationship, in that job, in that career, in that place, in that environment. Because maybe it is and maybe it's not. This is where you have to develop discernment. Discernment. Balance. Because what happens in a life that's highly evolved is that sometime with all the best intentions, good karma catches up with you in the form of name and fame. Your charismatic personality places you in the limelight. And pretty soon it's become a beast that you have to keep feeding until you've lost yourself entirely into your image. This happens with so many performing artists. And what sometimes happens is that the soul will orchestrate a complete catastrophic breakdown to stop them in their tracks. And that would be the grace of God coming in. Because otherwise, there could be a gradual falling into deeper and deeper addictive patterns, degradation, and darkness, and that lifetime would be wasted. So sometimes that pattern interrupt comes as a drastic injury, accident, or even a disease. But something has to bring that mad dash to a halt so that the soul can grab the attention of the personality and wake it up. That's why you absolutely cannot judge what's happening in another person's life. You can only have the absolute faith that it is going to take them home by the fastest possible route. And home is within your own godhood. So although the sattvic quality of balance and goodness and spirituality, at least assumed spirituality, in one's life is beneficial, bear in mind it's still a chain, albeit a golden chain. It's still a chain that binds. And that definition, too, must be let go of. It must be jettisoned. It must be let go of at some point. So the color associated with the sattva guna is white. all good things, right? Well, yes. But we must let that go as well. Because hear me and hear me well, we are not here to be spiritual. We are not here to be balanced. We are not even here to be devotees. We are not here to be disciples. We are not here to be initiates. We're not even here to serve humanity. We are here to awaken from all differences, all duality, all labels, and all states of consciousness and expression. We are here to awaken as God in full divine awareness. We are here to awaken to our presence, filling and illumining all hearts and minds. We are here to awaken beyond our manyness as the one who initially dreamt it all. You are the divine dreamer that dreamt the dream of manyness and is now simply corporately awakening within all of your many selves. We are to let go of any attachment to any state less than that, less than our full godhood, as Sat Chit Ananda, eternal existence, awareness, and bliss. That is the ultimate truth and the ultimate goal of every sentient being in existence. And I hope this discourse this evening has been helpful to you, because every spiritual path seems to not actually show where we are creating our prisons. And whether the prison is one of inertia or excess activity or even spirituality, it's still confining and defining you as less than what you truly are. You are God, indistinguishable from God. You are birthless, deathless, immortal. You are ever immaculately pure and innocent, ever content, ever free. Fear, grief can never affect you. You are the absolute allness throughout all creation, ever full, ever fulfilled, ever whole. Take a deep breath and open yourself and just allow yourself to receive the energy of this transmission according to your highest rate and highest good. And we ask the Order of Melchizedek to place its seal, that which has been imparted may be absorbed according to the highest good and rate of each listener at this time. And we go out chanting, and I hew. Deep breath. And I hew. And we send a blessing to all sentient life forms. May they all awaken. May they all have happiness. May they all have health. May they all have peace. And may they all awaken as God. Namaste.